Welcome to Ask Men's Health, the podcast tackling the most important health and fitness questions according to you, our readers. You ask, we answer. In short, to-the-point summaries, we cover the background, the science, and the reasoning behind the most talked-about topics of the day. No bullshit, no filler, just expert advice you can trust. I'm your host, Christopher Riley, and this week, for our first episode, I'm joined by Men's Health editor, Scott Henderson. How you doing, Scott?
Good.
So, to jump straight in, because the point of this podcast is to give you super quick, super succinct information, so we're going to get straight to the point. We'll be starting with a topic close to both of our hearts, obviously, fitness. So let's jump straight in. What's our first question, Scott?
So the first topic that we're going to answer today, sent in by Dylan, thanks Dylan, is should I be doing fasted cardio?
Yeah, so this is a good one to start with because, to be honest, anything fasting related is getting a lot of attention right now. So before we begin, let's just give a quick definition of fasted cardio. And so as the name suggests, it's doing cardio exercise on an empty stomach. So typically it's done first thing in the morning because you haven't eaten throughout the night, but it doesn't have to be. If you're doing a fast, for 4 to 6 hours, you could do exercise after that, as long as your body isn't digesting, basically.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think the question here is, what are the impacts on fasted cardio on certain goals? So I think what we need to look at is, I think most people do fasted cardio as a weight loss tool.
Yes.
And I assume that's what Dylan was asking.
Yeah. I assume so. Dylan, you can send in some follow-ups if you want, mate. But so the traditional thinking here says that starting your day with fasted cardio enables you to burn more fat. And so essentially without having a stomach full or even sort of half full of food means your body starts burning fat deposits first rather than burning the calories of the food you just consumed, which seems to make sense in our head, right?
Yeah.
Sounds quite logical. And as Scott says, to people seeking to lose weight, this is a good thing. But does the science back it up? So despite its popularity, there's actually little to no scientific consensus on whether faster cardio helps to burn fat. I hate to brag it to you, Dylan. The reason for this is quite simple. While you burn more fat rather than carbs during your fasted cardio session, your body will then compensate by burning more carbs throughout the day. So overall, the benefits are cancelled out. Are you a fasted cardio guy, Scott?
I am, actually. I was just about to ask you the same thing. But
I do it pretty much every day, yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, I like to exercise first thing when I wake up. And I often find it's not actually a weight loss tool. I just find that for me, I work out better on an empty or half full stomach. And I don't want to feel heavy and lethargic like I do after I eat.
Absolutely. I'm the same. It reminds me of something the UFC fighter Georges St-Pierre said. And he's obsessed with fasting. He actually takes it to quite an extreme. But he said that if you think about like animals in the wild, they're always slightly hungry. And it kind of gives you that sort of that hunger, that edge, rather than, as you say, feeling really full, really comfortable, sort of, sleepy and warm. It gives you that extra hunger, literally and figuratively.
I think it is important to note that I never do dehydrated cardio.
Hell yeah, that's a really good point. Actually, this doesn't mean you can absolutely drink water, drink as much as you want. And I kind of feel like you should always start your day with a tall glass of water just to get hydrated. So yeah, fasted cardio does not mean dehydrated cardio. Let's clarify that.
Yeah, I think, there obviously have been anecdotally, obviously the science doesn't, there's no biomechanical reasons why fasted cardio increases fat burn. But it's interesting. I think a lot of coaches incorporate it into training programs, mostly because it actually narrows the eating window. So if you think you're always going to feel hungry after a workout. So whether you're doing fasted cardio or you eat before your workout, you're still going to eat after your workout. So you're actually, essentially there's more calories going in than calories getting burnt. So I think anecdotally where the weight loss comes from is that shorter eating window during a day. It's like any fasting program, 16, 8, whatever you kind of follow.
Funny you mentioned that, actually, Scott, because there is a study by the University of Sydney in 2017 that backed that up. So two groups, some that did fasted cardio, some that did fed cardio, they actually just found that that those doing fasted cardio consumed less calories during the day than those doing fed cardio. And as Scott says, it's just simply because the window of your eating, rather than starting eating before the gym, you start afterwards, you end up typically consuming less calories. And we all know the only sort of surefire way to lose weight is to consume fewer calories than you're burning.
I think when you were doing the research, I'm not going to claim the research here, Chris, but when you were doing the research into this, you identified The Rock as someone that follows fasted cardio. I personally don't think he does it for weight loss.
No.
By the looks of him, he's definitely on the weight gain train. But I think he's probably in a similar boat to ourselves, where he works out a ridiculous hours around his filming schedule or his business schedule. And I think he just gets up and gets it done rather than eating one of his famous
cheat meals
before eating a workout.
So we want to have this super practical for you guys. So what is our recommendation here? So we'd love to be able to give you a sort of definitive recommendation either way, but this is one of those sort of annoying conundrums that really just comes down to personal preference. As we've said, we like it. But that also is partly because I tend to fit in sort of 1 to 2 workouts a day. So I might do a short half hour faster cardio in the morning and then hit my weights in the evening, which coincidentally is also what The Rock does. I'm not saying he copied his from me. We'll just leave that as that.
Both physical specimens.
Exactly. But if you do choose to try faster cardio, take it slowly. Sticking to low intensity exercise like cycling or incline walking for no more than an hour will do the trick. Anecdotally, again, I actually tested this yesterday and I did a super intense faster cardio session, and to excuse my French, it left me fucked for the day. Essentially what you're doing is you're using up the glycogen in your muscles, leaving you exhausted for the day ahead. So I wouldn't recommend that. Would recommend relatively light cardio exercise in the morning on an empty stomach. Awesome. So we're gonna jump straight in for the second question. We're gonna try and tackle 2 questions per week. And the second question, Scott, who have we got and what have we got?
This one comes from Phil. Thanks for writing in, Phil. So Phil asks, should my knees go over my toes when I squat? Ooh, I cannot wait for the feedback from coaches listening to this.
Yeah, so this is a bit of a classic one. And as someone with super dodgy knees myself, I was kind of excited to dive into the research here and tackle this. Don't let your knees pass over your toes is one of those like super popular cues in the gym. I'm sure we've all heard it. It's something that I've actually kind of taken as sort of assumed knowledge since I started working out. But the more we probe this, the more it starts to break down. So let's sort of just think about the background here. So the thinking is, as soon as your knees move past the line of your toes, the stress on the knee increases, and that's obviously a bad thing. Next thing you know, you're like me and you're sort of letting out involuntary groans every time you get up, which I can assure you guys is not a good look. So, however, this...
Isn't that the classic 30-year-old noise? When you stand up.
And now, thanks for bringing that up, I am approaching my mid-30s now, so yeah, I'm safely in the involuntary groan space of my life, which is lovely. Okay, so let's look at the science. We don't want to be the ones to single out anyone in particular throughout this podcast series, but unfortunately we've got little choice with this one. So the myth seems to come from a specific study by America's Duke University way back in 1978. So, Scott, I've done the reading, mate, so I'll save you the time. The study encouraged having a vertical lower leg as the safest way of squatting, essentially forbidding any movement over your toes. And this had a really huge impact. It created a generation of people and PTs who thought squatting past your toes was a surefire way to end up in a wheelchair. It had huge, widespread influence, and it wasn't for a couple of decades until that started to get disproven. So, in 2003, new research found that when your knees... This is an interesting one, actually. Scott, so pay attention here, mate. When your knees move past your toes, stress on the knee increased by 28%, they found. Obviously not ideal. However, and it's a fairly massive however here, if you limited knee movement in the squat so they didn't pass over the toes, stress on the hips and lower back increased by a whopping 1,000%. So essentially, by preventing your knees from passing over your toes, you are transferring and magnifying the stress onto your hips and lower back. Not ideal. There's also another reason why it's not such a bad thing to have your knees moving over your toes. Let's think about everyday life. From standing up from the toilet seat, sitting down, walking downstairs. Just do a mental note of it now. If these all involve your knees passing over your toes. So, if this is such a common occurrence, shouldn't we strengthen those movement patterns so they become safer and more efficient? Scott?
Well, look, I'm going to draw, just before we kind of get into a definitive answer, draw my own experience here. You know, I've been fortunate enough to train under some incredible strength coaches in my time. Given my 1RM squat, they Which obviously is. Haven't done a great job. however, I just want to put, highlight the point, the stress placed on the knees, the lower back and the hips in the different variations of the squat. If placing stress on our muscles is how we strengthen and build them. So essentially, if we didn't want to put any stress on our joints and muscles, we wouldn't squat in the first place. As long as you're doing it safely and with good technique. What I found in my experience, I've trained under coaches that have said, don't put your knees over your toes, do put your knees past your toes. I think what's best here is it's a technical cue for technique, and it's where that person is in their squat technique.
Mm-hmm.
Telling a client or an athlete to actively think about not pulling their knee over their toes, what that achieves is it puts them further back into a sit position and straightens their back.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually that transferable movement that, you know, by adjusting one thing and giving one cue, you're passing it through the body. You know, some people, when they squat, their knees go over their toes, but as a result, they're leaning too far forward, mm-hmm. and they have a rounded back, which then does put pressure where it's not wanted. So I think it's a cue that coaches use. It seems from the research to me that there's not one definitive answer. It's a tracking line, and it's your knees should be, I think it's undisputed that your knees should be in line with your toes.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they go over or back, I think that's a coaching cue up to the coach.
Absolutely. And there's no, as with a lot of things we'll cover, there is no hard and fast rule. A lot of it comes down to your mobility as well. If you've got really good mobility in your hips and ankles, then you're going to have greater ability to have room at the bottom of your squat, and your knees can safely go past your toes. If you don't have that flexibility, then we wouldn't encourage trying to get your knees past your toes. If you think about, say, Olympic weightlifters, just do a quick YouTube look at any Olympic weightlifter right at the bottom of their squat. You'll more than often see their knees will be past the toes. Now, this doesn't mean that everyone should be doing that. It just means that these guys have got remarkable range of motion in all of their limbs and hips and ankles. So that enables them to get to that position. Now, if we could all have that range of motion, then we would all be saying knees over toes, but we don't. So there is ultimately no hard and fast rule. Before we go, I'd like to leave just a couple of recommendations on how we can safely build up to having this kind of range of motion. So one good example of an exercise to sort of move towards this is the anterior step down. So, and this is an easy one you can do at home, guys. Stand on your bottom stair, whatever raised ledge, with your weight on one leg. Slowly reach the heel of your non-standing leg forward onto the floor, keeping the heel on your standing leg on the ground. And what you find is just like a very mini squat backwards and forwards there, and it's going to just place a little bit of stress on the knee and strengthen up those movement patterns. But finally, remember, guys, don't be a hero. If you're having any pain of any sort, whether it's in the knee, the lower back, frankly, your fucking ear, when you're squatting, stop and go see a physio and figure out why that's happening.
Good summary, Chris. Well researched. Very well researched.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Ask Men's Health. If you have a topic you want us to cover, submit your question via our Instagram page @menshealthau. See you next week, guys. We'll